Welcome back to another episode of Miss Congeniality, your most favorite podcast. It's Friday. Hi, everybody. I'm so excited for today's episode. I am officially back home from tour for just a few days before I hit the road again to travel some more, but I'm so glad to be home on my couch podcasting because there's nothing I love more than being home on my couch podcasting. I feel like I really missed this. It's like talking to myself, but I always picture you guys like walking to class or in your car on your commute or wherever you listen to Miss Congeniality, because I just feel like it's us chatting like we're friends. So I'm so excited to be back podcasting. Today's episode is going to be all about books and reading. And even if you aren't a reader, I feel like this episode is for everybody. Even if you don't like to read, I think we could get you there. I just think it's such a good habit to be in, but we're going to talk about my reading journey. I'm going to answer all your questions about reading. We're going to do lots of book recommendations and just kind of talk about the industry as a whole, like from a reader's perspective. I feel like I have a unique perspective because I'm a writer and a reader, and I just felt like that would be a really great episode to talk about today because reading has gotten cool again. I feel like the whole like thing these days, and I did just see a TikTok about this of someone being like, stop organizing your apartments, like go out and like experience life. But I do feel like our generation loves to like bake and cook and stay in on the weekends and read and listen to podcasts. Like I feel like we're really into taking care of ourselves and self-care and all that stuff. Sometimes I feel like it is a bit of an overcorrection, but there is like this like boom of reading and readers that I feel like has come up and happened in the past few years. Because I feel like before it was like not everybody was a reader, and now it feels like everybody likes to read, which I love. So I thought this was a really apt episode and I'm excited for it. But first, let's do some updates. Let's talk about some things. Starting, of course, with the elephant in the room. Last time I talked to you guys, I could not tell you that I was announcing my second book. Does anyone else feel this way? The New Rules for Conquering the Quarter Life Crisis, while I was in LA recording, because by the time the podcast came out, it would not like coincide with my announcement, which I made on stage in Austin at the final show of the I Didn't Know I Needed This tour. But I'm so excited. I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about it and a little bit about the process. So basically when I wrote I Didn't Know I Needed This and finished it, I knew that the pressure would probably be on to pitch a second book pretty quickly after, or even if not before, the first one came out, because we wanted to strike when the iron was hot and work off of momentum, especially because we knew that we wanted to work with HarperCollins again, which is my incredible editor and publisher of the first book. And so we knew that, you know, we wanted to be fresh in their minds when we pitched the second book. So we actually put the pitch together for Does Anyone Else Feel This Way in November, sent it to them December 1st. They had a month and some change to get back to us. And if they didn't want to buy the book, we were kind of giving them first dibs. We would go out with a wide net and look to other publishers and editors. And it was so amazing and exciting because they wanted to buy the book and they wanted to work with me again, and they wanted to publish my second book. So I'm so excited. And it's definitely like a natural progression from I Didn't Know I Needed This. I feel like, to me at least, I Didn't Know I Needed This was specifically the dating book that I wished I had from ages like 18 to 22. Does Anyone Else Feel This Way is like the general book I wish I had from like 20 to 25. I Didn't Know I Needed This speaks to a lot of experiences I had and then discusses like how I processed them. And Does Anyone Else Feel This Way is really going to focus on feelings that I'm having currently and have had recently and how I'm unpacking those like in the present moment. It's a lot about navigating the time period in your 20s when everything goes and nothing feels right, and trying to figure out adulthood and feeling like a so-called adult when you don't feel like you have everything figured out and don't feel like you have all your shit together. It's going to be very similar to my podcast episode, You're in Your 20s, WTF Do I Do Now? I know you guys really liked that one. It was the most downloaded episode of last year. And actually after that podcast episode, I decided, you know, I think there's a book here and I really want to write a book based on these themes. So I'm so excited. I'm currently in the outlining drafting phase. So nothing major going on yet other than lots of outlining and table of contents work, but I'm just so excited. And I think, you know, I've been really thinking about how I Didn't Know I Needed This was definitely the best I Didn't Know I Needed This I could ever write, but I don't think it's the best book I could ever write. And that's no shade to that book. Like, I just, again, it was the best book of that book I could ever have written. But I feel like I have more to give, more to grow, more to learn, more to share. And I can't wait to mature with. Does anyone else feel this way? Also, I kind of spoke to this in my most recent podcast episode, you know, the welcome back episode. But I feel like I wasn't really able to focus on writing in the way I wanted to with I Didn't Know I Needed This because I was so new to the content creation space as a career and a job for monetization. I was so new to publishing. I had no idea what to expect. I really withdrew from my social and personal lives a lot in order to be able to focus on both those things at 100% because I felt so like insecure and not confident in my place with both. And then I feel like I really couldn't focus on like my mental and emotional health, and there was just so much going on. I was literally in survival mode. And with this book, I'm really looking to dedicate more time and energy to the writing process. And I think what that will look like is just me pulling back a little bit from social media, both TikTok and Instagram. And it's not going to be like an 100% change. You guys are used to seeing 7 to 10 posts from me a day. I think you're going to see more days off and maybe fewer posts in volume, but the quality of the posts will be the same. The integrity of the posts will be the same. And my content is going to remain the same. So there's not going to be a big change. I just want you guys to expect maybe a little bit less of me in this current moment so that I can focus on giving you the best book possible. I'm so thankful and grateful for all of you that bought I Didn't Know I Needed This, that devoured it and loved it and appreciated it and sent in reviews and messages. Like, you are the reason that I'm writing a second book and that I have so much going on now and so many things to get excited about and feel proud about and feel I'm there's so much anticipation. I'm so excited and I feel so emotional about all of this. And it's been such a special time. So I got home from tour. I've unpacked, I've cleaned, I've organized. My brother's birthday is this weekend, so I'm going to celebrate that with them. And then I'm going to Austin for South by Southwest. I'm sitting on a panel on Thursday. I'm doing a book signing. I couldn't be more excited. I'm like absolutely thrilled. I love Austin. I'm really excited to be back in Texas. And my boyfriend and I are going to spend a week in Austin and then a week in Houston with his family. So that'll be really nice. Lots of time to focus on writing, which is what I'm really looking forward to. I really feel like it'll be like the beginning of my process and like day one of writing this book. So I'm so, so excited for that. And I absolutely can't wait. Definitely more to come from this new era, but just thank you so much for all of your support. I'm so excited and I'm just like so excited to be here with you guys. Anyways, though, I wanted to talk about The Bachelor. I watched this week's episode and I said this last week, but I just want to reiterate, like, Maria being sent home was like literally the best thing that ever could have happened to her because she is just intellectually out of Joey's league. And that is not a dig to Joey. Like I've already said, I think he's a king and he's fabulous, but we're all on different intellectual levels. And I just think that she's on like a bit of a heightened intellectual level. Like, she's smart. She's a go-getter. She knows what she wants. And like, she is going to find that. Like, I am 100% convinced without a shadow of any doubt that this woman is going to go out into the world and find her person. And like, she's her own person too. I'm just so in awe of her. And like, even though it was so painful to watch her get sent home, I think it was absolutely the right thing. I already know, I'm not going to spoil it for you guys. I already know what happens because I looked it up, but I'm like, I guess like I never really trust, oh, my phone just fell. I never really trust reality Steve. Like, I'll look it up, but I think he was wrong in his prediction like earlier on and then he confused me. And now I feel like it's kind of been a whirlwind. I kind of like when reality Steve is wrong because then I have the chance to like be in the know, but also not in the know. So yeah, he was wrong with his first prediction. Then he re-predicted and now I know what's happening. But anyway, I've been loving this season of The Bachelor. And the real reason I think the season of The Bachelor is so good is that Joey is actually a good person and he's not like masking as a good guy or pretending not to be a douchebag. Like, he's not a douchebag and he's a good person with a good heart and a good soul. And he's very emotionally aware and emotionally intelligent. And I think that he's able to actually facilitate strong, really strong, meaningful connections with these women because he's actually a good person. And I think that just makes for a better TV. Like, bring back good people in 2024. Bring back good people on The Bachelor. Like, I want to be watching good ass fucking people on this show, not just your regular asshole guy that you got from the local fraternity. And I know that's not where they get them, but like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm a fan. In addition to The Bachelor, I've been doing a girls rewatch. And listen, I haven't watched that show in so fucking long. It's so cringe. Like, it seriously is so cringe. But that's a victimless crime, as we know. And the other thing about it is, like, everything Hannah says, literally everything she says is an intrusive thought. And I like want to kill her. I'm like, girl, everything you say is an intrusive thought. And you think that all of it is like the mecca of comedy and humor. And I want to kill you. And like, I understand that she's supposed to be cringy and like, that's her whole thing. It's so much for me to handle. Like, she is really like the cringe monster of the world. Like, a secondhand embarrassment is like next level. And I guess that's a testament to like how well written the show is. And I like to watch these things almost as like research, because like, I would love to write a girl style television show in the future. And I do think like a lot of the dialogue is iconic, and like the depiction of Adam Driver and Hannah's relationship, like I never remember his name on the show, but like their situationship is so fucking iconic. And like, it's, he is perfectly cast for that part, because like, as someone who's felt like Hannah in the past, like just awkward and goofy and like trying to figure it out, like I feel like I've gotten into like relationships with guys, like situationships that are just like really hot, sort of awkward, like don't give a fuck about you guys, but when you're together, they're like so nice to you and also so gentle and tender. Like, there is just something so perfect about that casting and the way he plays that role and just like their interactions. I don't know. I recommend a girls rewatch if you can get over the cringe factor, because it is cringe. And like, a lot of the reason that it feels that way is because like, I have behaved like that in the past, and I have, you know, I've been her. I've been all of them in many different ways. They're just, it's just great. Like, it really is fabulous. There's something about a show as well that's like for girlies. I don't know. It's like a Sex in the City thing. It's like Sex Lives of College Girls, though I don't know what's going to happen to that without Renee Rapp. But, and I don't know if they hit every mark in the way that a Sex in the City or a Girls did, but there's also things that Sex in the City and Girls didn't hit correctly as well. It's just, it's so comforting to me, a show about four girls. So I've been watching Girls, a little rewatch, and it's been fantastic. So I've really enjoyed that. And it's just been comforting too. I feel like, go back to your comfort shows and you can't go wrong. I finished Bunny by Mona Awad, and I have lots of thoughts. So I guess I'm going to kick off this book reading literary podcast episode with a review of Bunny and a recommendation to read it if you haven't. So I'm going to let you know when to skip ahead if you don't want spoilers about the book. But Bunny is this book by Mona Awad. I would call it a psychological thriller. Goodreads says it's a horror, but I think it's a psychological thriller. And it really masks as literary fiction, but it's about these girls that go to this very prestigious MFA program at a very, very prestigious Ivy League school and their creative writing graduate program. And the main character, Samantha, she is in a cohort or a workshop with these four other girls, and it's only the five of them. And they're in a little clique that's like very much so like the clique or Gossip Girl, like pretty committee vibes. It's the four of them. They all call each other Bunny. I feel like we all have an experience with like that group of popular girls, and they would call themselves like the Fab Five or whatever in high school. That's just like so canon. But she hates them. They kind of hate her. And then one day they invite her to their like smut salon, AKA their kind of like culty hangout that they do, their little workshop outside of class that they do. And she goes, and shit really hits the fan. Now you should pause if you don't want spoilers. Obviously, I'm not a big sci-fi fantasy girl like at all, but I think that's why this book worked for me. I'm not great with books that are like 100% fantasy or sci-fi. Like, I won't read like ACOTAR, and like, I like Harry Potter, but I don't love it. But I think that what's so interesting about this book is that it isn't completely and entirely obvious that we're not in our perceived world or our current reality. It isn't like Harry Potter, where you open up that book and you know for a fact that we are not in reality. We are not in today America, like, or like on this globe. Like, we're in a completely different alternate reality. There is world building done that you immediately know, okay, we are not in my like home turf. We're somewhere else. This book isn't like that. So it is written in at least the first 50 pages. You do think that they're in our reality. You do think that they're in our world. And you do think that like fantastical things or like magical things like would not happen in their world, because it's our world. You're reading the book as it is our own world. I think that's what I really liked about it. But there's a lot of people that don't like the book. And there's also a lot of people that interpret the book to be about Samantha, the main character, having schizophrenia. And that sort of being the reason why all of these fantastical things happen, because she imagines them. I really don't like that interpretation. And I think that does a massive disservice to Mona Awad's world building capabilities and her artistry and craft in general. You know, I think that the reading and the interpretation of it as Samantha has schizophrenia is very similar to a book ending with "and it was all a dream." It's a bit of a cop out, and I don't think that that was Mona Awad's intention. I think that what really is going on here is that a lot of people just weren't able to sink into the fact that even though this looks eerily similar to our world and our reality, it's not our world and our reality. It's very different. It's somewhere else. It's someplace else. And because of that, we're having to understand and perceive it through the fact that it's not our reality, even though it looks like it is ours. That's like confusing. And so I could understand why people would be like, oh, she's just schizophrenic and imagined all of this. What I think really happens is, like, in their world, people are capable of, like, creating darlings. And I think Samantha is somebody who subconsciously creates darlings without even knowing it. And she's so good at it. Like, she's such a high artist in this way, like, doing this art of creating darlings, that these darlings that she creates can interact with the real world. I think Ava is one of the darlings that she created. Max, obviously, is one of the darlings she created. And I also think the lion is one of the darlings she created. These people are capable of interacting with the world around them. The bunnies are trying to create darlings. They can't do it subconsciously, but they notice that Samantha is doing it, and very well. Like, she's creating darlings that can interact with the real world, aka Ava and the lion. The bunnies are over here trying to create darlings, and they're blowing up heads and sort of fucking it up. And also, their darlings can't interact with the real world. So they're like, let's invite her into our little group, and then we can sort of learn her tactics or have her teach us. But when they invite her into their little group and they show her, like, their sort of darling creation workshop, Samantha is, like, really freaked out, and that's when they realize that she's doing this subconsciously. She doesn't know that she's doing it. She's not trying to do it. So then they try to manipulate her into joining their little cult so that they can gain the skills that she has. And I think that, like, the metaphor or the allegory of the story is that there are people who are real, true artists who create out of a necessity, who create because their life depends on it, who create subconsciously all the time. And then there are people who want to be artists or want to cosplay as artists, or like the aesthetic of being an artist, which is the bunnies, which is shown by the sort of over-exaggerated, hyper-elitist Ivy League program that they're at, that's almost like funny and comical. They're being so exaggerated about it. And it's so, like, over the top liberal arts school. It's almost like a mockery of it. And I think that that's kind of what it's supposed to convey, that they wanted the aesthetic of artistry. And that's, like, why they're all obsessed with, like, using all those big words in their workshops and everything like that. And I think that the only, like, person that's either Samantha's, like, real true friend or not someone that she, like, imagined and created herself was Jonah. And that's why the story really ends and starts with Jonah. So that's how I feel about it. I feel like I need another read through after finishing it, but it's a brilliant book and I highly recommend it. And I'm looking forward to reading other things Mona Awad has written. I love her prose. It's definitely a step above a porch read. It took me a little while to get through it, but I am now reading Dolly Alderton's Good Material. Just started. Everyone says I'll love it. I think I'm going to fly through it. I wasn't a fan of Ghost, which is Dolly Alderton's first fiction book, but I love her writing style. I think she lies somewhere between an Emily Henry and a Sally Rooney, and I'm really looking forward to reading this. Similarly to Dolly, Dolly writes from a male POV in this book, and I used to always write fiction from a male POV in college. I would be like, am I having an identity crisis? Like, why do I not feel like writing from a female POV? And I think a lot of it was wanting to create men that I wanted to have in the world, like wanting to write men, like men written by women. That was like something that I wanted to play with. I think it was like a craving, like filling a gap that I perceived to have in my life. And so that's why I used to write from the male POV. So I appreciate her doing that. And on such a large scale, I'm really looking forward to getting into it. I'm like on page 10, but I just started that today. A lot different from Bunny, but I feel like I needed a bit of a departure from it. And then I'll get back to maybe reading some of Mona Awad's other work. Okay, so I wanted to kick off this episode talking about my like reading journey and what kind of a reader I am. I have been a lifelong reader. I don't like say that to be like, I've been reading longer. I was reading first. Like, that's fucking dumb. But I, my mom read to me a lot as a child, which I know is a huge privilege. Like, she was a stay-at-home mom and she read so, so, so many books to me. I was speaking full sentences at 9 months old. Always been a yapper. Career yap. My grandma was like, yeah, you should bring your child to a mental facility. That's not normal that she's speaking in full sentences. Anyway, I think a lot of that had to do with reading, and I've always absolutely loved books from such an early age. So I got my fill of, like, in middle school, like, the book thief of it all, and I did the mother-daughter book club and the Click books and Harry Potter and the Magic Treehouse and all that stuff. And then once I got to, like, seventh, eighth grade, I was a pretty advanced reader. So my seventh grade English teacher, I forget her name, but I know exactly what she looked like in my brain. She gave me a copy of Wuthering Heights. And she was like, I want you to read one chapter a week and then we can talk about it. Because I was, like, advanced in terms of, like, my English class. And we did it side by side with Spark Notes. It was so difficult. And I really credit, like, teachers with kind of fostering my love for reading in an academic way, because after that, I kind of looked to English teachers to supply me with knowledge of the classics. I read Rebecca with one of my English teachers, like, on the side, like, at lunch, like, they would help me. And before school, I read Anna Karenina with one of my high school teachers. I had teachers that were like, yeah, we want you to read Emma by Jane Austen. We want you to be reading the Bronte sisters. We want you to be reading the classics. Like, we think that you can. And it was just, like, really nice, I think, to have people that, like, people I looked up to that read so much. Like, my mom read 50 Shades of Grey when it came out, and, like, my dad reads books for work, but I wasn't surrounded by family that, like, loved books. And that's, like, not their problem. They don't have to love books. Nobody does. But it was nice that I could go to school and the teachers there, the female English teachers specifically, were actively like, we want to continue to facilitate and foster your love for books and reading. And we want to continue to encourage you to challenge yourself through books and to learn through books. And I think I credit a lot of the way I am today to them. And that was just, yeah, it was really nice. So Wuthering Heights remains one of my favorite books. I actually have my high school English teacher's annotated copy of Wuthering Heights from college. If my house was burning down, that's what I would grab. It's literally one of my favorite books of all time. Actually, I might do a reread. It's so, just whatever souls are made of, his and mine are the same. Oh my God. I love Kathy and Heathcliff. I love Wuthering Heights. I love that Emily Bronte chose to write that book during a time when that kind of a story, like, wasn't acceptable. And that was her only book. And I only, like, wish that she had written more. But I had such privilege to have also public school teachers. So school teachers who were, like, not getting paid a shit ton and don't have to do this for their students, going out of their way to help me become a better reader. And I'm just so grateful for that. And it definitely fostered my love of books even more. And going to college, I loved to read. I started probably, like, my sophomore year of college reading a lot of personal essays. I was so drawn to personal essays. In high school, I was obsessed with the Modern Love section of the New York Times. I was obsessed with the New Yorker, and I was obsessed with the Atlantic. And those three places fostered my love for short story and fostered my love for personal essay. If you haven't read through the Modern Love section of the New York Times, like, I'm geeking out talking to you guys about this right now. It's, like, my favorite thing to talk about. You have to. So I was obsessed with all three of those mediums. I also loved the Paris Review. I would buy copies of the Paris Review. I wanted to work at the Paris Review. So personal essay, and then that turned into memoir, and short story became kind of, like, my favorite things to read in college. I read the fucking gamut of memoir and personal essay and short story. I started to love Patti Smith, absolutely adore Joan Didion, fell in love with, like, so many different theorists, like bell hooks, Audre Lorde. I absolutely fell in love with Toni Morrison at the time, originally through her work doing, like, short form. And then I dove into, obviously, her long form fiction, which is some of my favorite writing of all time. I just became obsessed with, like, Margaret Atwood. Oh my fucking God. I'm obsessed with Margaret Atwood. She's my, one of my favorite authors of all time. And then that turned into Cheryl Strayed. And then that turned into Glennon Doyle. So there was just, I absolutely adored personal essay, memoir, short story. For the longest time, that's kind of like what I read. And I think it was also partially because that's what I was writing in college. And I really connect to the genre that I'm working in, as a writer, but I realized that might not necessarily be the best way to do things, especially when I'm writing for like a professional capacity. And so over COVID, I kind of went back to fiction. I started like reading fiction books because Literati was like having a sale and I bought a bunch of fiction books that were on sale. And then I just got back into the fiction thing. So now I kind of read everything. I think my favorite genre is literary fiction. And that's kind of like the porch read of it all. I like romance books, not my all-time fave, but I like them. And I love, 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 love True This Minute, a fucking well-done personal essay. Man, there are so many well-done personal essayists, like Gia Tolentino. God, is that book good. Crying at H Mart. God, is that book good. Like, those are like, that's just like masterful personal essay work. And yeah, just so, so beyond, like next level. I also love memoir. I love Michelle Obama's memoir. I'm trying to think of some other memoirs that I love. I mean, Patti Smith, like, God, she's my, Patti Smith is up there for me. It's like Patti Smith, Margaret Atwood, Toni Morrison, like big three. Obviously Cheryl as well, but she's like more modern. I feel like she's a little bit younger. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at as a reader. I don't really believe in any books being bad. Reading is so subjective, you know, like my least favorite book is probably someone's favorite book. I mean, my best friend, Julia, she's like a huge avid reader. She definitely reads a little bit more than I do just in terms of volume. And we have the completely opposite taste. Books I hate are her favorite books and books I love, she hates. And it's because of that, that I don't even believe in there being bad books. I just think that it's all subjective. And I think that for me personally, I don't do Goodreads and I don't do anything like that because I don't like the way that reading has become a form of like, I don't love reading on social media. And this is no shade to you if you have a bookstagram or that's what you do or it motivates you to read or if it works for you. I love that. For me personally, I don't want reading to feel competitive. And I feel like these like reading goals and like, a lot of, I feel like in Instagram book culture is like a big dick contest of like who is reading the most, who read that book first, who got out their review first, who is posting what book, who is reading more, who is reading the most, who went to see what author speak. It gets a little bit competitive and it's like that with anything, you know, like I always say this, I love pop culture and I love just like watching award shows. I literally am obsessed with award shows, but it's become this competitive thing for me now that kind of lacks joy because it's like something like the Met Gala and something like the Oscars is like, I need to be watching for work. I'm watching so that I can put out that fresh, unique pop culture take so I can be the first one to do it so I can have my finger on the pulse. Like the whole thing with the Grammys and like me low key predicting that she was going to announce a new album on stage, like that was so much like pressure. Like I was like wanting to just like enjoy the Grammys and there was so much pressure to like, I don't know, like be like on and like working. And I feel like I don't want books to be like that for me. It's okay if that's like brings you joy or you love to do that or you love your bookstagram. Like I follow bookstagrams, but I'm not gonna be one because it's just, it brings a level of like heightened competitiveness to reading. And I really don't want to take the joy, comfort, and almost like relaxation away from reading because if I start putting pressure on myself to always be posting about what I'm reading, I feel like I won't find the same amount of joy in it that I do now. And that's exactly how I feel about so much pop culture. Like, I feel like I can't even watch my favorite shows for fun anymore because I'm watching them to create content around them. And it just like, kind of like, I don't want to say ruins it, but it definitely like certainly makes it less like fun. And I'm not villainizing you if you are a part of those communities or if you run one of those communities. Like, it's just because everything in my life has to be online and it can tend to suck some of the joy and mostly relaxation away from those things, I choose not to opt into that with books. I am so excited because we have a new partner today and I have been testing this partner out for the last few months to make sure I loved it before coming on here to endorse it and give you guys a special code. But you're in for a real treat because support for today's episode comes from Jenny Kane. You guys, there is something about a sweater that you can wear in all four seasons. Like a sweater you can layer in the winter, a sweater you can wear in the fall, a sweater you can wear in the spring, a sweater you can throw over your shoulders on a boat day. Okay, date a man with a boat, find a man with a boat, get on a boat in a Jenny Kane sweater and tell me that you don't feel perfect. It is a California brand through and through, and their staples make getting dressed easier than it's ever been before. They're like minimalist and effortless, but refined. Like, I have this one sweater from them, you guys. I am not kidding you. When I wash it, I'm patiently waiting for it to come out of the wash because I'm constantly in it. It's just like the best basics yet. If you're looking to do a capsule wardrobe type of thing, you're gonna want to go for the Jenny Kane. Like, I just, it has this quality, like it's such high quality that you never want to take it off. But I also think it's really well priced and the aesthetic is just basics, but elevated ever so slightly so that you can really bring in your personal style. Their sweaters are the quintessential must-have item. This season especially, I can't get enough of their cotton collection. The oversized cotton fisherman and the cotton cocoon are the two sweaters I have. They're perfect pieces. Perfect pieces. You'll be wearing them on repeat, you guys. Okay. So of course I do have a code for you guys. I want you to find your forever pieces at Jenny Kane. That's at JenniKayne. And you guys can get 15% off with the promo code Miss, M-I-S-S, at JenniKayne.com/Miss. That is JenniKayne.com/Miss. Hashtag Jenny Kane partner. I love Jenny Kayne and now you will too. Love ya. And you know, Goodreads of it all, like I have mixed opinions. I think it's really interesting because lots of authors are on Threads and I'll go on there to like read what's going on in author land on a day-to-day basis. And one really big problem that authors run into is people sending them negative reviews or 1 or 2 star reviews of their books, like posting them and sending them as though we don't know where to find those things or as though we want to see those things. At the end of the day, and this is like genuinely what all authors believe, this is like a part of the industry and what people say, is that reviews are for readers. They're not for people in the publishing industry. That's sales and reviews, like journalistic reviews. Reviews from other readers are for readers. Goodreads is for readers. It's not really for authors and it's definitely not for publishers. It's similarly to how I feel about Reddit threads. Like Reddit snarks are for consumers of content, not content creators. That's not for me. I'm not going to go on there because that's not for me. That's discourse that people want to do. Whether or not I think it's okay, whether or not it makes me feel badly is another story. That's not for me. It's not my space to take up. It's not for me. It's a place that people are going to talk about me, sure, but it's not for me. And I really feel that way about Goodreads, where it's like, as a reader, it's for me. As a writer, it's not. And I was reading lots of threads from lots of authors saying like, please don't tag me in your negative reviews. And I think that that's like true with anything. Like they exist and they're allowed to exist and you're allowed to have an opinion on my work and you're allowed to review it badly. But the intention of you doing that should be to let other readers know, hey, I didn't like this book. Here's why. Here's the type of books I do like, so that you can lead people in the direction of reading a book that they're going to like, so that people can find like-minded readers. The intention of posting it should not be to shit all over an author and have them see it and send it to them or tag them. The intention should not be to get a publisher to not give an author another book deal. I mean, those things aren't even going to work, frankly, because I mean, you might upset the author, but it's not going to work in terms of the publishing thing because reader reviews are for readers. And I think that if you are using Goodreads in that way, incredible. Give a bad review, give a good review. I don't care. Freedom of speech. Just don't tag authors in it. And I think you need to make sure that your intent is not to be malicious in that way, but rather it is to be a place for other readers to come and say, oh, I'm not going to read this book because this isn't the type of writing I like, or I'm going to read this book because this person liked it and we tend to align on the same kinds of books that we like. You know, I'm not a fan of sci-fi and fantasy, but that doesn't mean those books are bad. I wasn't a fan of Dolly Alderton's first fiction book, but that doesn't mean it's bad. Do you know what I mean? And I think that there is a lot of like competitiveness with these apps and accounts and a lot of like Goodreads bombing that happens. And there's also this feeling that comes up of like, I oftentimes feel like I'm like a bad reader because like I'm not setting reading goals, and I'm not setting like, oh, I have to read this many books by the end of the year. Because again, reading to me, I really want it to be about joy and relaxation. And there is this just like overarching competitiveness that comes out, and it can make you feel like a bad reader. You're not a bad reader. As long as you're reading, you're a good reader. That's all you have to do. You can read whatever the fuck you want. Colleen Hoover or Proust, you are a good reader. It does not matter. You're a good reader. Validate yourself in that. And if these places where people go to talk about books aren't serving you, then don't go on them. That's really like what I do. Like, I mean, I'm not going to go on them because they're not really serving me and it's not my favorite. And I prefer to just not. And I, instead I use this app called, let me bring it up. It's called Reading List. And all it is just you write what you read and that's it. You just write down, okay, I read this book, and then that's all. Like, that's all that happens. It's so nice. It just keeps track of what books you've read, but you don't get to say like, oh, I liked it, I hated it, whatever. You just say, I read this book, and period, end of story. I have read 3 books this year, trying not to beat myself up. It's only been 2 months. I feel like that's pretty good. But I have read Funny Story by Emily Henry, which is her upcoming new book, Commonwealth by Ann Patchett, and Bunny. So those are my 3 that I've read. And then I can see the books that I read last year as well. And I'm going to give you guys some recommendations from the books that I've read in the last year. I'm just going to go through and talk about them. And then I'm going to answer some questions that I had on Instagram. Okay. So if you're looking for a kind of... if you're looking to go on a journey, like a Gossip Girl-esque journey, but if it was set at a sapphic, kind of very sapphic fine arts school where like everybody's like having sex and hooking up, girls and girls and boys, as Taylor Swift would say, I would read Sirens and Muses by Antonia Ingress. Huge, huge rec from me. I read this last year. I loved it. It is a quintessential porch read. It feels like gay Gossip Girl at a fine arts college, and the prose is beautiful, and I'm a huge fan. So I would 100% read that. Another porch read, if you're looking for something fun, flirty, and fresh, maybe a little historical, and if you are a theater kid or you've been, or you're a New Yorker, I would read City of Girls by Elizabeth Gilbert. It is so fucking good. Like, this one is for the girlies that, it's almost like, also if you're an Eve Babbitts fan, which, you know, Eve Babbitts, we can get to, but City of Girls is a perfect book if you ever worked in theater or entertainment, if you've ever lived in New York City, and if you've ever been like having a quarter life crisis. It spans over a long period of time, starting I think at World War II and going all the way up through like the 60s, 70s. It's really great, and I did really enjoy it. And if you liked that book, you should read The Chelsea Girls by Fiona Davis, which is also about the same time period, also about artists in New York City, but it's about the Red Scare, and it's about these two girlfriends, and it's so good. Like, I randomly got into reading books that are about like the 40s and 50s in New York City and like women who were artists, and I was a big fan. So if you're into that, The Chelsea Girls, City of Girls is one of my favorite books of all time. So highly, highly, highly recommend. Okay, this one should not come as a surprise, but if you haven't read Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle Zevin, I need you to get your fucking ass up and work. I know it's big, and I know it might take you a little bit of time to get into it. It is such a good book. Like, it is seriously one of the best books I have ever read. It is literally about video games, but don't take it the wrong way. Like, I read it. I read the back cover and I was like, there's no way I'm going to like this. Don't judge a book by its back cover with this one. You guys have to read it. Like, if you haven't read that book, put it on the top of your TBR. I'm not kidding. If you take one thing away from this episode, it's to read Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle Zevin. I'm also obsessed because this wasn't Gabrielle Zevin's first book, but it's certainly her most like acclaimed book. And it just shows that like, you will get there. If you want to keep write, if you want to write and be a writer, you will. Just keep going and don't stop at anything. And she really didn't. So I love that one. For those of us who love a romance and who are looking to get out of a reading rut, I have 2 recommendations. I always rec Emily Henry. If you haven't read it, let this be your sign. Read Emily Henry. Read Book Lovers. Read Beach Read. Read Funny Story when it comes out. If you've already exhausted the Emily Henry of it all, read Lucy Score. Fast, quick reads, a little smutty, very romantic. I think they're going to make this into a movie or a TV show, maybe. I'm not entirely sure about that, but I feel like it got optioned. Read Lucy Score. She has tons of books. They're all romantic. They're all sexy, and you will love it. And that's what you're going to read if you're looking to get out of a reading rut. If you're looking to challenge yourself a little bit, read Free Food for Millionaires by Min Jin Lee. She's the author of Pachinko, which is a huge undertaking. It's like probably like a step above my current attention levels because I've been trying to focus more on reading because I feel like I have so many things going on, and I used to be a way better reader when I wasn't so distracted by the internet. But Free Food for Millionaires is an incredible, incredible book. It's about this like really strong-willed Queensbred girl, and she's the daughter of Korean immigrants, and she basically lives this really glamorous like New York City lifestyle that she can't afford, and she really wants to make it on her own and like get out of her parents' like super tight-knit community, and things just go hit the fan. And again, it's like another book that's like set in New York City, and it's just fabulous. It's so fabulous. That was also one of the best books I read last year. I really like last year, my bookshelf ate down. Like I was just reading book after book that fucking smashed it out of the park. This one smashed it out of the park. So read Free Food for Millionaires by Minjin Lee. My friend Haley Jacobson wrote a book called Old Enough, and it's her debut, and it is about a girl named Savannah, and she is in school, her sophomore year of college, and she comes out as bisexual, and she's making friends with some other queer people at school, and she, you know, gets into this situationship that she then gets out of, and then kind of her best friend from childhood named Izzy, who like knew her at a completely different time of her life before she was out, gets engaged, and Sav and Izzy like kind of have this like friendship fallout that just things haven't been the same because something happened between Sav and Izzy's older brother when they were younger. And now Sav is forced to like face all this trauma that she thought she could kind of put past her. And then there's like a little love interest. It is a perfect coming of age story. And if you are bisexual or queer, or you've ever gone through like coming out, I personally haven't, but I think that it would, based on what I understand from other readers who are queer or bisexual, they just felt really heard and seen, and they really connected to Sav. And I think even if you're not, you can really connect to Sav, because I really connected to Sav, and I think that she's just a fabulous character, and Haley does a fabulous job in that book, so highly recommend. Okay, another one that's a little bit like literary fic, probably like a bit of a step up from a poor trade. Like you're gonna need to like reread some chapters to make sure you're getting everything, because the prose is just really like mature, I would say, is Take My Hand by Dolan Perkins Valdez. I hope I pronounced her name right. But it won the 2023 NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Literary Work. It is really incredible. It's inspired by true events. And it's about a black nurse in post-segregation Alabama who becomes the whistleblower for some injustice that's being done to her patients. And it's set in the 70s, and this nurse wants to make a difference, and she works at a family planning clinic, and she wants to help women make their own choices for their bodies and introduce them to birth control. And then she like meets these girls that are her patients, and they're literally children, and they are really like low income and poor, and she is trying to like get them on birth control, and basically takes them in. And then she one day like arrives to their house and finds out something like very terrible has happened to them. It's, oh my God, so emotional, so moving. I had no idea about this true story. And like, it is just such an example of like history that gets lost or that we don't remember. And wow, like if another rec that if you're going to take one of my recs, you should take this one. This book fucking rocked. It was incredible and very sad, but incredible. Okay, this one is a Reese's Book Club pick, so you guys have probably heard of it, but Yellowface by R.F. Kuang. Obviously, it was an instant New York Times bestseller. It's very, very good. It grapples with dark humor. It's a bit of a thriller, but it's basically about this girl, Jupiter Song, who did not write the book that she claims that she wrote that made her famous, and she's also not Asian American, and she sort of stole an Asian American writer's work and pretended it was her own. And it's very funny. It's also very chilling and like kind of frightening. And I think for someone who has intrusive thoughts, like if you are a creative of any kind, this book might give you anxiety, because the whole time you'll be like, oh my God, have I ever plagiarized? Like, no, you have never done what she did. I mean, I don't know if you have, but like you probably haven't. Really good. I read that one really fast. Very, very good. Another one, if you're looking for like a chill beach read, I want you guys to read Advika and the Hollywood Wives. It's such a page turner. It might look long, but it's a beach read. It's such a page turner. It's kind of gives Taylor Jenkins Reid vibes to me. It's basically about this girl. She's in her 20s and she's like low-key a failed screenwriter. And to pay the bills, she's been bartending like super A-list events, like working at the Oscars and stuff like that. And then she meets like this high-power film producer at one of these things, and they get into this relationship, and he's very controlling and very private, and then she slowly starts finding out information about his ex-wives and like goes down this rabbit hole, and it's like so fucking crazy. It's such a page turner. You'll be obsessed. It's such a good little beach read, and I was a huge fan. Like, I read it on a beach vacation and I just could not put it down. It was wonderful. I also started to get into Anne Patchett this year through Tom Lake. I read Tom Lake and Commonwealth. I liked Commonwealth far more than I liked Tom Lake. If you're into like page turning books, Anne Patchett's not for you. She sort of writes about like the human condition, and she writes about very basic things in a very compelling way. Like, she writes about family structures, and she writes about divorce, and she writes about marriage, and she writes about like falling in love. And it feels like the synopsis of those books feel basic, but the way that she writes them is so revolutionary and incredible. If you're a writer and you like prose, you have to read Anne Patchett. Like, she really is a genius, and it almost aggravates me how amazing that she is on the page. I would recommend Commonwealth over Tom Lake, personally. Another kind of easy beach read, Once More with Feeling by Alisa Sussman, which is very funny. It's very warm. It's about this girl who used to be like America's number one pop star, but then she like basically got canceled because she like cheated on like her like boyfriend, who was also like a pop star, when they were like literally 19 years old. And now she kind of like has just resided to like teaching dance lessons and singing lessons, and like leaves her pop star image in the past. But then this like casting director comes to her and is like, you should star in this Broadway show that I'm directing. And this is basically like what she's always wanted. And the casting director happens to be the guy that she cheated on her boyfriend with. And so they haven't talked since, like, obviously they like fucking blew themselves up by having that one night together. And then she agrees with the musical, and then obviously, like, you know, they have sex. So that book is really, really like easy beach read, fun, silly. You'll read it fast, and there's good smutty little scenes. So I recommend that one as well. The last book that I want to rec to you guys is The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett, which I read at the end of the year and definitely is in my top three. I would say my top three last year were Tomorrow, Tomorrow, and Tomorrow, City of Girls, and Vanishing Half, with Take My Hand as like a very close number four. But basically, this book is about these twin sisters. They're identical, and they grew up in this very small like Southern Black community, and they ran away at 16 years old. And the community that they're from was basically all only light-skinned Black people, and the community was like colorist and basically only wanted people to meet other light-skinned Black people and like have kids with them, because they were very colorist. And the twins run away, and then they get basically like go their separate ways, and one of them marries a Black man and has a Black daughter, and then the other one secretly passes for white. And her husband has like no idea about her past, and they completely lose touch. And it's absolutely, absolutely incredible. It is like, you guys have to read this book. It's like one of the best books I've ever read. Seriously. Like, I could say a million good things about it. It's so, so good. Okay. So now I'm going to look on Instagram at some of the questions you guys have submitted to me to talk about. But yeah, you guys have to read that book. Okay. So people want to know, do you get embarrassed to say you read, update your Goodreads with like smutty books? Absolutely not. I feel like a lot of people watch porn, right? Like men, women, non-binary people, like, but I would say like men are very forthcoming about their like watching of porn. Women don't really talk about it as like much. I just don't see like a big difference. Like if it also like writing that's about sex and like smut books, like if they're done appropriately and if the sex scenes are written in a respectful manner and, you know, and they're written appropriately, I just feel like, what's wrong with that? Like, what's shameful about that? Update your Goodreads with the smut. Who cares? Read a smut book. Read it out loud. Take it to the park. Do your thing, you know? Do your thing. Okay. Someone said how to get back into reading for fun. I would read fun books. Like, I would read Elisa Sussman and Lucy Score. I would go to the romance section of the bookstore and read Beach Reads and read Emily Henry. Get back into reading for fun with fun books. There are so many fun books. I gave you just like a bit of a like mixed bag of books that you could read, but I would say read fun books and challenge yourself to read 5 minutes a day, 5 minutes, a 5 minute timer, and see how long it takes you to get pulled in that after the 5 minutes, you're adding another 5 minutes, you're adding another 5 minutes. If you just start with 5 minutes a day, it is crazy how quickly you'll all of a sudden be in an hour, I promise. Like, high school and college can really kill the joy of reading, but you can get back to it because there are so many fun books. And going off of that, to create those reading habits, I really think 5 minutes a day, and maybe on the weekends it's 15 minutes, but schedule out 5 minutes within a larger hour. So like at 9:30, get into bed with the intention of going to bed at 10:30, set your timer for 5 minutes, read for 5 minutes, but you also have the other 55 minutes available to you to either do something else. If you want to stop reading, you're allowed to stop reading or keep reading. I think once you get pulled into a book, you'll be reading, you'll be on a roll, and maybe schedule one date night a week out where you go out by yourself and you read at the bar. I do that all the time. And I think it's definitely like better than like being in the harsh glow of my phone at the bar when I'm on my phone all the time. And I just sit at a bar seat, order a glass of wine, maybe a snack, and I read. And that's what I do. How to push yourself to read even when you don't feel like it. I would say if you don't feel like it every day of your life, do the 5 minute method. But on days when you like don't feel like reading, I wouldn't force yourself to, because then you'll resent the practice of reading. And read books that you like. If you find yourself trying out these books that people deem popular, your friends are reading, or people that you know like or whatever, and it's just not for you, that doesn't mean you're weird. That just means you have different taste. Find the kinds of books that you like and read those. And also reread your favorite book. To get out of a reading slump or to push yourself to read even when you like don't feel like it, reread your all-time favorite book. You will find so many new like passages that speak to you, so many new metaphors, motifs, allegories that you didn't notice the first time. I know it feels like there's a million books to read and everyone's always talking about reading. Get off the internet, get off the bookstagrams, and reread your favorite book. Bookstagram and stuff like that, I think, puts a lot of pressure on reading. It's like, look at me, I'm such a good reader. It's like anything else. Get off the internet. Just go and reread your favorite book. Favorite Joan Didion book. Okay, my favorite Joan Didion book is probably The White Album, but I come to different Joan Didion books at different times of my life. I think if you want to start reading Joan Didion, start reading her essays, like her smaller, shorter work on the internet, because she published tons of essays online. And I would start there, because it might feel dense to just jump right in with The White Album, but start there. How many books can you read at once? I can read lots of books at once. Like, I started The Idiot again. I keep wanting to get into it. Just doesn't feel like it's speaking to me a lot. So I haven't finished it, but I might pick it up at some point. I started this book, Park Avenue Summer by Renee Rosen. Wasn't super into it. Might pick it up again at some point. I'll have to decide. I'm reading Good Material by Dolly Alderton, and I'm going to start reading something non-fictional. Got to figure out what that's going to be for me, but I love to read nonfiction and fiction at the same time. That's me. You know, I'm not a stranger to abandoning books. I'm not going to like force myself to read something that I'm not liking. If I'm sort of 50-50 on it, I will finish it. I was like 50-50 on that Fiona Girls book that I wrecked to you guys, but I started to really love it by the end. And I think, you know, sometimes that's what can happen. My top 10 favorites is so hard. But I would say my favorite authors are Cheryl Strayed, Margaret Atwood, Patti Smith, Toni Morrison. Wait, Cheryl Strayed, Margaret Atwood, Patti Smith, Toni Morrison. It's so hard. Like, Emily Bronte's like not my favorite author because she literally wrote one book, but like that's my favorite book. I don't know. Okay, Sally Rooney. I love Sally Rooney. We'll put Sally Rooney at 5. Oh, I can't even believe I didn't wreck any Sally Rooney. Get your fucking ass up and read Sally Rooney. Like, that is the Mecca. That is like next level perfection. Oh, Elizabeth Gilbert. That's 6. I couldn't. Oh, Joan Didion, obviously, that's 7. I don't know. It's so hard. I don't know. Okay, those are like my 7 favorite authors. And yeah. Yeah. Oh, Bell Hooks, that would be 8. Okay, we're at 8. That's 8 authors. How do you feel about reading 50 plus books a year? Listen, if anybody wants to read 50 plus books a year, go for it. I think I read 30 last year. I felt really good about 30. I don't really keep track in terms of like numbers, but that app I told you guys about, Reading List, it does show me the number of books I read. I just like to keep track of the books I've read. So I would say 30 is usually like my sweet spot. And if somebody wants to read 50 books, read 50 books, go fucking nuts. I really like the kind of thing is like, I don't care because reading is such joy and relaxation for me. And that's what I want it to be. I would say I had this goal when I was a junior in college where I was like, my New Year's resolution is to only purchase books written by non-straight white men. So women, queer people, people of color, immigrants. I really wanted to push myself to not read books written by straight white men. And that's only because I read this study that suggested that if you pitch a book to publishers with a male pseudonym and then your real like female name, you are 8.5 times more likely to be published when you are pitching the male pseudonym. And publishing is mostly women. Like the vast majority of authors, I think, are women, or it's at least 50-50. But that doesn't take away from the fact that the statistic is suggesting that there's more women pitching books and it's still easier to be published if you are a man. So I did that. It kind of turned into like a lifelong thing. I wouldn't say lifelong, but it definitely turned into a thing. My whole entire bookshelf is like non-straight white men. So I would say that's my reading goal. But I think that's pretty much all from me in terms of books. I mean, it's not. I could talk about this all day. But we don't have all day. We have just shy of an hour. So I love you guys. I hope you got some good reading recommendations or just maybe some inspo to go out there and read. I really appreciate you for listening to this. I love you so much. And I can't wait to talk to you guys so very soon. I will see you next week. And if you're going to be in Austin, I'll see you around. Have a wonderful, amazing, gorgeous, stunning, beautiful weekend. And I'll talk to you next time. Love ya.